This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. Today we're going to do a classic review of Raiders of the Lost Ark for you. My name's Wayne.
And my name is Paul. And, well, classic film because, of course, there are no new films coming out at
That's
the moment.
That's right.
Coronavirus has taken its toll across every industry, including the film industry, of course. And so we thought, great opportunity to go back and review some of our favourite classic films, and maybe some of yours too, but more on that as we progress through the month, the next month or three, probably. And this one, as Wayne has said, Raiders. Did you say?
I did indeed.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is, of course, the amazing adventure action film which kicked off a whole franchise that still continues, that we're getting a fourth entry.
Paul does not acknowledge the current fourth.
What?
Exactly. Okay. There it is.
This is directed by Steven Spielberg, and of course, the story comes from George Lucas and Philip Kaufman. It stars Harrison Ford.
Huzzah!
Arguably his first or second most iconic role, depending on which side of the fence you fall on.
I'm more of an indie guy than a Han Solo guy.
Me too. Karen Allen, Paul Freeman, John Rhys-Davies, and Denham Elliott. The music is, of course, by the legendary John Williams. It's 115 minutes long and was released on June 12th, 1981, so there will be no spoiler section to this podcast.
That's right, the whole thing's a spoiler.
If you haven't seen this film in the last 39 years, you don't care enough, and I'm surprised you're listening to
that. No. You know, here's what happens sometimes, Paul. Sometimes you live one life for 30, 40 years, okay? And then something happens, and then you have a different life. And then it's like, you know, I missed all these movies when I was busy raising little kids or being abused by a wife or something like that.
Let me put it this way. If I turn on a podcast that's called The Sound of Music.
Yeah.
I don't expect them to have a non-spoiler section just for me.
Well, okay.
Because I saw it in the title.
I'm saying that's cool, but like they may not care about the movie. They just didn't get around to it.
In 39 years.
That's right.
You're telling me that a film you wanted to see, you didn't get around to in 39 years.
It took me 39 years to get a bidet.
Did you really get one?
No, I didn't get it.
I was going to say, you really have embraced
it. But I really do want some water to flush my date when I fucking punch one out, son. So anyway.
You're new to the Countdown? If you're self-isolating at the moment and you thought, well, let's give this podcast a shot, we're sorry. Well, I'm sorry. I would say it's not what the show's normally like.
It is what we do here, people. That's what I'd say.
Is.
I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Paul, well. Paul also puts fucking sound drops of myself back to me because he's a cunt.
So,
Wayne, what is Raiders of the Lost Ark, or as it's now known, Indiana Jones
and the Raiders of the fucking Lost Ark. Yeah, okay. Dude, this is an epic tale. Indiana Jones is a cool motherfucker. All right, despite being an archaeologist. All right, so he's a professor at a uni. Shut up, there are
apologies
no archaeologists out there.
To all the
if
archaeologists.
Any of our listeners are archaeologists, I want to hear from you. And then we should hang maybe when this whole thing is over. Because I think it's cool that you fucking do this shit now after watching Indiana Jones. All right, he's got chicks in his class who are fucking just gaping over him because of all the, I don't know, hairy dick. Who knows, right? Then the government employs his ass to go find the damn Ark of the Covenant because of reasons. And it involves all kinds of cool shit. Whips, guns, jungles, motherfucking darts, Belloc and Sala, all kinds of shit. It's beautiful. You know what I'm talking about.
You can tell that Wayne really has written that well, that particular plot synopsis. He's working there completely off exactly what it says on IMDb. Not.
I sometimes go off book.
Yeah. The budget, by the way, was only $18 million, and it made $389.9 million around the world in 1981.
Bocce balls.
I've been stunned this film was made for $18 million. That's incredible, even in $81.
Would you say this is your favorite of the three?
I wore between this and Last Crusade, but
really,
pound for pound, I would have said all the way through my teen years after watching Last Crusade, because that was the only one I saw at the cinema.
Mm.
Right at the theaters was quite the experience.
Ah, I thought you were doing with the drive-in.
13 or 14, I would have said Last Crusade. But having since returned and having watched them both again, I think Raiders holds up better.
Yes, it does. And I love them all. You know what? I'm going to give you a secret here. Okay, this is some
it's not a secret.
Shit.
I know you love Temple of Doom the most.
No, I know that. Right, that's not the secret.
Oh, okay.
The secret is last night I started watching Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I know you're going to do the joke where which one, Wayne? I know. I'm just saying to you, in a world, step inside a world where that movie exists.
Why are you watching a Ridley Scott film?
Really?
Yeah, Kingdom of Heaven? Is that what you said?
No. Yeah, fine. Okay. So anyway, the fourth one I was watching is because it's closely... They actually mentioned Abner Ravenwood and it's got Marion in it and that sort of thing. I know, Paul's trying to pretend now like it doesn't exist.
You can just talk without me contributing.
Okay, fine. But yes, I understand what you mean. No, Raiders does actually hold up. Well, Yeah, I like Temple of Doom, but go on, please.
So Temple of Doom's your favorite. Please, for the love of God, don't tell me that you're claiming this film you're talking about that I have no idea what it is, is better than any of the other three.
No. It's most definitely the worst. Okay. But if you look at it, like the way Steven Spielberg directs, all he brought to that movie was that movie feels like this movie. It's like the sound and the way it's shot and that sort of thing, it feels like it.
I don't remember any sequence in Raiders Lost Ark where they're swinging through the trees with monkeys.
Yeah, maybe not that part. I'm talking about the other bits, but yeah. I don't know how this happened. Anyway,
let's stay with Raiders.
Back to Raiders, yes.
What an opening to a film.
The boulder, fuck the boulder.
First of all, we don't see his face for a whole bunch of
shots.
Exactly. It's just bits and pieces. It's building this mystique up of this character, and it's so skillfully woven in. And then there's Alfred Molina playing one of the thug dudes who are going to try ripping him off. That's kind of a nice little thing.
Totally big thing.
Decades later.
And you don't see, until he steps out of the shadows, you see, nah, 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 that's his face, right? And it was after he used his whip to disarm a motherfucker who's about to shoot him in the back.
So he's cool.
He's cool as shit.
Fuck.
All right, and then he's got that fedora going on. All right, all good. But after all the coolness, I remember watching this when I was a kid going, oh, so he has to negotiate puzzles that might kill him.
Well, the bit that sticks out for me in this whole opening sequence is, of course, the fucking tarantulas.
Oh, Paul's arachnophobe.
Oh, my God. Like, that is one of the most harrowing bits, and he's just like, so cool. He's just like, yeah, turn around. Yeah. Brushes them off himself.
I know.
Brushes them all off. Is it Alfred Molina's bait?
Yeah, his back.
And, oh, my God. You could not pay me enough money in the world.
Everyone inhaled in the cinema in the drive-in when I saw it. Like, I remember that going, like this. Oh. And it was so cool, though, right? Actually, no, I didn't see this drive-in. I just saw it I'm mixing it up with Temple of Doom.
Okay.
Yeah, but everyone, I know that shit. You would have had a particular problem with that.
That was hard. And then it's all juxtaposed then after he does this huge, cool thing and he takes the island and he escapes and he defeats all the natives escapes them, rushes down the hill, start the plane. He jumps in the plane and there's a fucking snake. I hate snakes! So we get to see the contrast here.
And totally cool.
Already, it's like, it's really genuinely great written scene because, opening sequence, because now you have a sense this guy. He's amazing in almost every department, but he's got a flaw.
He hates snakes. Yes.
He's not perfect and he instantly becomes that much more relatable.
Absolutely. And the fact that, because you know when he does the bag and he swaps out the bat in Seattle, there's nothing cooler than that. I'm like, I didn't even know that what he was doing with the bag.
That is one of the most memed things ever.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's so cool, man. And then he just, I don't know, but that is the shit, right? So
when he grabs his jaw and he's sort of rubbing his jaw in contemplation.
Oh, yeah. He's the handsomest guy ever. Like, he's real handsome. And I didn't even realize at the time, because my big sister had a huge Harrison Ford crush when I was a kid, right? And I'm like, I guess that's what I understand an attractive-looking man to be, but he's got some charm shit going on that makes the camera love him.
Yeah.
It's just
roguish
different.
Charm up to the way. So that's a great opening sequence. And then we see the full contrast. He's teaching, like you mentioned, at university. He's a college professor.
Yeah.
His boss is basically, talking to the
Marcus
government.
Marcus Brody.
Yeah. Great line from Last Crusade comes to mind there. He'll blend in. You'll never find him.
That's right.
Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, and that might be a review for another day.
Uh-huh.
But he gets sent off to find the Ark of the Covenant before
that. First of all, all right?
That's who I'd send.
Dude, when I was a kid, and it's like, why is the government sending a fucking teacher?
Archaeologist.
Yeah, whatever. He's a professor, right?
So, well, they also know that he is someone,
something of an adventurer.
An acquirer of antiquities.
That's right. Yeah. So, okay, good. But then, now it's like, I even forget this whole movie that he's actually on kind of a mission.
Yep.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like the government paid him to go do this thing. No, it's just because he's cool and he's fucking around in the jungle and getting shot at and shit. That's why this whole thing's happening. It is the balls that kind of career can be that.
It can't, obviously.
I'm just saying in the movie.
Well, but it's interesting, though, that the government, like even in this fantasy world,
yeah,
would choose to send one dude. Right?
I completely didn't even think about that.
Obviously, they don't credit the Ark as being a real threat, but the Nazis are after it, so we better just send some token.
They sent one guy. That's why he didn't even send a military guy. They sent an archaeologist.
It's not even the Dirty Dozen aren't sent.
I didn't even think about that.
Or just, at least accompany two or three soldiers to go with him.
Any other situation, this is a war movie or an army movie. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Or at least a small squad of people.
Definitely. This is like Suicide Squad-ish even more than it is like, send that teacher.
So you got to buy into that. That's...
Which I am happy to do. You know what's weird about this movie, right? This is what I noticed about watching Raiders, right? After all these years, Spielberg decides, and this is why it's memorable and enjoyable, right? He's got a scene where four men wearing shrouds attacking Indy and Marion, right, with knives, and he's about to stab her and stuff, right? And that whole thing is played with this like fluttery kind of really fun soundtrack. It's like, oh, look at this. They're about to get stabbed. Oh, the indie saved her. And it's just... And I was looking at that going, in any other fucking show, I don't even think you can do that anymore.
Well, yeah, it was the early 80s.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, imagine filming, like, a woman getting attacked now, right? And then treating it as anything other than serious. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't think you can do that.
No, you're right, you're right. It is a product of its time, but it's also a product out of its time. It was an 81 film set in,
1935, 1935,
was it like before? Was it before World War II, was it?
I guess I've forgotten that part, to be brutally honest.
Which is fine. So it's out of time, and you know, but it's an adventure. It's a callback to these serial kind of dramas of like the '50s and whatever, where it ends in a cliffhanger every time, and nothing was ever really serious, like Superman comics of the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Serious themes were played very, very broadly for adventure rather than serious stuff.
But that is what I remember about this show. Like those scenes where they're running around Cairo or whatever and they're dodging like all the dudes trying to kill them and stuff. It was still fun. I was like, oh, because you don't think they're going to get hurt and they aren't. Right? So for me, I could enjoy that. And like, that's what this movie is. It feels like indie. It feels like indie.
And then the great big, one of the all-time iconic moments where the dude has got the sword and he's doing a lot of things. And Indy just sort of lazily smiles and brings out his gun, shoots the guy dead.
You know the whole story behind that, right?
Yeah, he was sick.
Yeah,
he couldn't do the shits. Yep. Yeah, he couldn't do the required physicality that day. And it was his idea, I believe, Harrison Ford's idea.
Because they were losing time and it took them days and they had to leave Marrakesh or wherever they were.
Yep.
And he's just like, can we just do this? Okay, boom. Because apparently Spielberg's the only one who didn't get sick on that Tunisian set.
Right.
Because
he brought his own food.
He brought cans of spaghetti.
I remember hearing that story.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
And then the great callback, of course, in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom was the best one. I don't even know what you're talking about, man.
No, you're totally fucking wrong. Temple of Doom has the most annoying leading woman by far.
Oh, I love Willy. I haven't seen it.
I know you love Willy.
I don't know why I didn't see that coming. There you go. Just like the Willy. You know what? Speaking of Willy and what you do with them, Marion Ravenwood. Now, I wonder to myself, like, why did Spielberg choose her? Right?
Because she's got spunk.
That's exactly what it is. Because she's fine. She's not particularly attractive in terms of 1980s leading actress.
Well, she's not stunning. No. She's got this great lived-in. Yeah.
She's scrappy.
It's all about her personality.
Yeah.
She's a mate. She's so attractive. And they have such a great chemistry.
It really did. And I actually enjoy... I'm only looking at it now as an adult or whatever who's been crushed by the world. And I understand what the world expects and this and that. And at the time when I saw her when I was a kid, I was like, oh, look at her. I understand wanting to be with her. You know what I mean? Even though I was a kid. So, it to me is an odd choice. And I reckon it would have been Spielberg going, give me someone scrappy. Get me someone spunky. Give me Punky Brewster, but old.
Before Punky Brewster had even been a thought in some executive's mind. But yeah, I think her opening sort of introduction scene is also excellent up in the is it the Himalayan Alps, whatever?
Yeah.
Wherever she's in the snow somewhere.
Oh, yeah, she's in Nepal. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Nepal, thank you. It is in Nepal. And, you know, she's drinking all those dudes, big dudes under the table.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, first thing you see.
Great stuff.
She's fucking everyone up. This fat dude, like, boom, nope, she can drink more than him.
And then we get the freaky Gestapo guy, and he comes, you know, with his coat and shit.
Please, the coat hanger?
Yeah.
Is that not an iconic, like, I remember as a kid going, oh, my God, and clink, 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 you know? That kind
and you think it's a weapon, he's going to torture it with.
Oh, my God, it's a coat hanger.
Yeah.
This is shit this is the shit that I remember.
It's just great writing. And again, fits the tone perfectly.
Great writing, great execution. Do you know what I remember about that scene where they go into her bar in Nepal or whatever and then they start the thing? The gunshots and the punches.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The gunshot is like... That's the gunshots, right? And then the punches are like... I saw how they actually made this. It just sounds a lot more cartoony sounding, the punch, than normal, but it's great because it's that kind of show. Yeah. So that's the shit. I mean, I love that.
Which again, clues you in as a modern audience that this is not something to be taken deadly seriously.
Yeah. And yet I did, though. Yet I remember doing that.
As a kid, sure. But now as an adult, when you watch it, it's just good fun. This is a rollicking adventure. The greatest adventure film ever made, arguably. There you go. I've said it.
No, it's Last Crusade. Last Crusade is better than this one.
I thought that until I watched Last Crusade again. And I just thought, Last Crusade, here's my problem with Last Crusade. It's not as well paced as this one is.
Yeah, to be sure, lots of shit happens really quick. And I find that's the mark of a good movie. If you're watching a movie that you've... Maybe it's because you always liked it. But like The 40-Year-Old Virgin, if you put that on in the background, you would be surprised at how...
How do we get from Raiders Lost Ark to the 40-year-old version?
Because it's paced similarly. Like, it's, you don't notice it, but it's paced really
do
fast.
Do people's faces melt at the end of the 40-year-old version?
Yes, but metaphorically, because he finally has sex. But I'm saying, like, a fast whipping pace, which is good as opposed to this last Skywalker movie, or the Rise of Skywalker movie.
Yeah.
That was too fast, all right? But doing it properly, that's a mark of a good movie. If you, and that's why, yeah, I see what you mean.
It's editing and the like. Whereas that film had some flat patches.
Yeah.
Last Crusade. And I don't think the end sequence, I mean, as much as, is anywhere near as good as the chase in the cars and he's being thrown over the bonnet and fighting with that dude. You know, I think that's one of the all-time great action chase sequences ever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas the, you know, running across the desert, with the tanks and whatever else. And
did you notice that when they were, you know, he was at the after the big guy gets chopped up by the propeller, right? And then finally he gets Marion out of the big bomber plane,
yeah, the plane
canopy just, before it blows up. He then runs away. You see this big, really cool shot of them running from the plane, and then behind him everything blows up. But if you look at that shot again, it's like, why did you run that way, Indy? You're actually running across the explosion. You should be running away from it, like towards me. Well, I know, yeah, I know. Well, I didn't think of it at the time.
Well, now that you say that, it just reminds me of the Desperado explosions where dudes are flying across the camera shot. Yeah! Even though the explosions are behind them.
There's an explosion and someone flying across the explosion. Yeah. No, well, I liked that. I mean, but this is, again, I don't care. I'll never penalize a movie for that because I'm like, I thought this was so cool. I know why he ran across the frame. It looked cooler.
Yeah, it looked good. Exactly. Now, that does bring me to something which I want to mention. One of my favorite documentaries, our second favorite documentary now of all time, is Raiders Story of the Greatest Fan Film Ever Made.
Oh, yeah.
I talked about it in my top 10 documentary episode 2-3 years ago, whenever it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's currently on Netflix. And the whole film was That whole film was built around, they had redone it through the years. Every scene they'd remade themselves. The only one they'd never done was the fight in the plane.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the plane's twirling around and fighting the big guy. And so they're all coming back together as adults to shoot it as adults.
Is it good?
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. What's it called?
I think it's called Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, yeah.
If you type Raiders into Netflix in Australia, it comes up.
Okay. Now, here's the thing, everyone. A little intel about the production here and some discussion. George Lucas made this film when he was turned down to be a James Bond director. Like, he tried to go, and he basically said, this is better. He wrote this thing because he couldn't really get to it. Was it Spielberg or was it Lucas? You know, it was George. So that's why, yeah, that's why Indy became, because if you squint and you put Indy in a suit, which you did in Temple of Doom, what? All right. He's James Bond, man. He's James motherfucking Bond. Except, because he's suave, he got a piece, and he's fucking nailing everyone.
Well, I don't know if he nails that many people.
He puts a load in at least one person.
It's just Marion.
Okay, so he's a one-girl guy across three movies.
He's Willy in the second one.
Yeah, and then Ilsa Schneider, awesomeness.
He's definitely not banging. Yeah, she's smoking hot.
She's got to be the best one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. In terms of looks.
Yeah, she did end up being a Nazi, yeah.
But in James Bond, he's banging at least a couple, in most of them, at least a couple of different women.
Okay, all right. So he's a more wholesome James Bond, but
he's less of a coxman.
Less of a coxman, but more of a whipsman. It's like, he's got his little gadgets, not really. I don't know. It's better. It's just better.
I agree. If I'm going to choose to watch anything, it's going to be an Indiana Jones film over a Bond film. I know that might upset some of our listeners, but
like me, I probably would. Even though I prefer this character in that manner while we're talking, like, a Bond film is a Bond film, man. You know what I'm saying? There's more of them, so I understand.
Yeah, well, yes, it was a much greater choice there. The other bits that are worth mentioning, I think, John Rhys-Davies as Sala makes a good impression.
Man.
I especially like when he catches the date out of the air. Bad
dicks. Are you nuts? That scene was the shit. Slow-mo throwing a date in the air. It's about to land in the dude's mouth, and we all know it's poisonous, and then he catches it?
Yep.
He's a legend.
Love that sequence. Apparently, the snake bit where he has to then confront his fear to get the Staff of Ra, whatever it's called, in the right place.
Oh, when he's lowered into that pit and there's snakes, asps, very dangerous, right down the bottom, right? And then they actually put their lower torches down and he's got a little space and then he sets them on fire. That's iconic to me as well. It's like, oh my God, he's stuck down there with this girl. Like, it says, what is this?
Oh, and then they get caught and what's his name? Belloc seals them up in there to die.
That's oh my God. And it was a huge thing for me at the time. And then I was like, watching it again, I'm like, he just moved one of those big statues and then it knocked out like a wall and they somehow escaped. But they were underground, so how'd they do that?
I think there was a hill.
Oh, okay.
Like a dune.
then they would have just died of the thing collapsing on them. But never mind, that's all right.
Oh, collapses out. Well, yeah, I guess the sand. Who knows?
I don't want to think because I like the shit out of it. Now, here's something that I need to address, Paul.
Please.
The Big Bang Theory.
Yes, that had they.
Yes, they purport in an episode, yes. Or Amy Farrah's father does.
Yep.
Says that basically Indy is superfluous to the entire plot. All the things would have happened if he wasn't in the movie, as in the Nazis still would have got the fucking arc, this, that, 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 that.
Would they have found it eventually?
Now, this is what I wanted to address, okay? Here's what it is. Towards the beginning of the film where Indy's boarding that plane, or is it a Zeppelin? Or I think it's a plane, to go to Nepal to talk to Abner Ravenwood, and then he finds Marion, right? He's getting tailed by that Nazi agent dude, the bald guy with the glasses, yep. And the thing. They were doing that so they would find how to... Basically, that guy tailed Indy to Marion's place, and that's how they got the fucking medallion, and that's how they... If Indy hadn't been there, they wouldn't have tailed him and found the damn medallion. So none of this shit would have happened, so fuck them. Indy absolutely is not superfluous with the plot.
I tend to agree, but it's not like, if anything, he aided the Nazis. This is probably the point.
Unfortunately, he actually helped them get it. But it would have been a different story if he wasn't there. So I say, the point is adventure.
Sure, I agree with you. Can we get to the end of the film to probably wrap it up as we start to get a little long on this?
Sorry, we're talking about
it. No, it's a great film to talk about. It's that good. The iconic opening of the arc and Indy telling Marion to close her eyes, and then everybody sees the power of God and whatever else, and those spirits all come out, and then their faces melt. Now, given this is a PG film, dude, can you imagine Nazis melting in modern day
cinema? No chance in hell. Let me tell you about how bad this was for me, right? I couldn't watch this scene for years because I saw this on VHS, all right?
Likewise.
By the way, watching it on Netflix or was it Stan or Amazon? Whenever I watched it, right? Netflix. Yeah. I was watching it and I was like, this is the best print of this movie I've ever seen. Every other version of this has been darker and less defined. I can actually see that horrible ghost at the end when it goes woo like this. Yeah. When I was a kid, I couldn't watch that because it's like an angelic face and then it melts away into the skull.
Yeah.
And I went, that's the scariest thing I've ever seen. And then you see Belloc and all those people, their face melt with plasticine looking shit. But that was really hard because their fucking eyeballs turned white and then it fell out and then there was blood. I was like, Jesus, fuck. So I couldn't even watch it for years, man. All right? And yes, you ain't seen no damn PG like that now. So there you are. Did we talk about this? Oh, no. Temple of Doom was like introduced.
That and Gremlins?
Yes. I think. The PG-13 came right after that. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway. So, yeah. No, I agree. That shit is fucking harrowing. Harrowing. And they did that. How did they do that? I don't think it was all,
like you said, you called it Play-Doh, plasticine.
Yeah, but like, how did they get away with this being a PG? Yeah. Like, it scares everyone. That's probably why people remember this movie, man.
There's so many memorable points.
No, but it's a horrendous, holy shit, that thing happened at the end. And then, you know, yeah, shit.
Right down to the whole, you know, oh, God damn it, where doesn't it hurt? Oh, here.
Yeah, I
know. Here, like, you know.
No, that was cute!
I'm saying there's so many memorable moments. Absolutely. In so many different ways.
Like, every guy wouldn't point to the dick immediately.
No, and you.
No! I reckon it'd be here to here, and then... No, if she goes, elbow, here, and then she gets the elbow, straight to the dick.
So you wouldn't bother with the mouth, is what you're saying.
Oh, no, I would. No, yeah. I would. I'm just talking about him. Bitch, please.
Is what you would say.
Oh, shit. Anywho.
Yeah, all right, let's keep it... well, too late, but no, this episode's PG.
This is not why people listen.
No, it absolutely is not. All right, well, I think I've covered everything that I really want to say about this particular wonderful film.
Let me ask you something. There's no way you can actually rate a movie that was always a favorite in your memory, right?
I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay, go on.
I'm going to give this one 91.
Yeah, fine, 95. There you go.
It's a very high score on the countdown. One of the highest we've ever given.
Yeah.
For good reason. That for almost 40 years after its release, it's still an absolute favorite of mine. It would be, I would say, in my top 30 films of all time.
Yeah. You have to go along with that.
There we are. That's our review, classic review of Raiders of the Lost Ark. We hope you've enjoyed our little trip down memory lane. There'll be more of these coming along over the next month or three, I do believe, is probably what we're talking about before we can even remotely consider getting back into something approaching normalcy. And if we go for longer, we'll go for longer. We're going to be here. We're going to be riding this storm out with you. So keep it right here.
That's right.
Keep it downloading it. Let us know your feedback. Let us know, hey, if you've got a classic film that you think everybody loves, you want us to do, let us know. We might just do it.
Boom, boom.
All right, cool. So thanks so much for joining us. You can find us via Twitter at the Countdown PC. You can send us an email with that choice of film to thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. We host our show on Podbean. You can like the show and follow along there, as well as leave comments. And hit up the Facebook listener community, where most of our communication with our awesome fans takes place. Thanks so much for joining us again today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And we need to find an appropriate noise to wind up what I think is, as we have both discussed, one of the best films ever made. I think I've got it.
Yeah! It's for every one of us! That's for every one of us!
Okay,
that's
okay.
Indiana.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, great.
Fine with me.
We'll catch you next time.
See you, kids.